week, we're joined by Tom Oakden, Managing Director, Hilltop Hospitality, to discuss what's occurring in the transactions market, why Prime is winning, and what cakes are likely to disappoint as an athletic aid. Hello, and welcome to another episode of New Tricks, which is the podcast from New Dog PR. We are New Dog PR. I'm Emily Newman, and the other half of New Dog PR is Catherine Dogwell, freshly returned from the mountains. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm now 85% cheese.
That's a pretty solid status for a Monday morning.
Yeah, it's very good.
And presumably this cheese was in melted form?
Always, always. You don't want to, after a hard day of watching other people ski, you don't want to have to chew your own cheese, do you?
Heavens.
Goodness gracious. Emily, you've got to introduce me, haven't you?
Well, yes, but I thought you were going to do that for me. I was going to make a cup of tea or have some melted cheese.
Okay, well, I'm Tom Oakden. I'm MD of Hilltop Hospitality, and I have been on this podcast before and thoroughly enjoyed it, and I will thoroughly enjoy it again. And skiing is one of my passions, and cheese is also. So perhaps we can start on that subject.
Well, the subject I'd like to start on is Tom's phenomenal background, which I'm going to take a screenshot of so that you can decide whether Tom is or isn't, for fans of other podcasts, Rory Stewart or Alistair Campbell, and or at this point. So there we are.
Wow. Well, for those of you who are listening and can't see this wonderful library shot, it's a real library, and it's a shot that I took in a friend's house, and it's a wonderful stately home in Yorkshire. And there is a photograph behind my right shoulder as you look at me, and that is Mother Teresa, I kid you not. So we're in great company today. Catherine, you're going to have to look at a bit. Yeah. And some wonderful volumes as well in this historic library that's probably
How does it smell?
Great. Musty, slightly musty, but it's always good to look learned and sort of slightly educated on Zoom calls, and but also I think from the get-go to have a sort of a discussion point. So rather than having sort of too bland a background, I quite like to sort of start the discussion with the library.
Solid starting point. Many thanks.
Immediate elevation.
Absolutely. Tom, the reason that you are such a regular and popular guest on our podcast is because you look at the transaction market regular-like, and we quite like looking at the transactions, and we quite like extrapolating trends and whatnot. So might we kick off with what, you know, is clearly a really succinct and very well-researched question in what... What's it looking like out there from your perspective?
Wow. Well, look, I won't go on too long, but there's a fair bit to say, because actually January, February, we've seen a lot of transactions, and we've also seen some refinancings as well. I also look at sort of global transactions. So there are a few observations from around the world that I might mention as well at some stage. But first and foremost, the market at the moment is really in two halves. You've got the sort of the long-term capital that's buying prime assets in prime cities, where pricing is still fairly healthy for sellers. Pricing's being held pretty firm, and deals are happening. These are not buyers that need debt. They've got long-term aspirations to hold these assets. So we are seeing quite a lot of liquidity in that sector. Whereas, of course, in the leveraged world, we aren't at all, because at the moment we're going through pricing discovery, where some owners might contemplate sale, but they don't know if they will go to the level that buyers are at. So they're going out testing them at the moment, and perhaps creating some competition, driving some of those prices up. But it's a very difficult one at the moment for private equity with the core plus buyers, because of the cost of debt. I mean, to give you an example, M&G refinanced the Vivian portfolio early this year, £200 million, and the spread was 3.85%. Now, what that effectively means is that is the cost of the debt over and above LIBOR or the three-year LIBOR or swap rate. Today, that swap rate is approaching 4.5%. So, in essence, what you're talking about is you're talking a debt cost of 8%. So, and that's from M&G financing. So, if a credit fund finances, it's going to be even more expensive than that. So, for these funds to make their hurdle rates financing at these sort of levels, it can only mean one thing. It means that prices have to fall. But do they have to fall? They only have to fall if sellers need to sell. And at the moment, there is this sort of pricing discovery going on. So we don't know if they will sell. There needs to be sort of micro, macro changes, events to happen for these types of deals to happen. And a lot of people are talking about, well, hang on, this could be the year of the refinancing. So if owners need to refinance at these sorts of scary rates, they are going to have no option but to fill liquidity gaps by selling minority stakes in assets or portfolios or possibly selling outright. And it's a hugely valid point, because if you look at, and I just did a bit of sort of scribbling on this, if you look at a 10 million pound debt today and assumed that that was raised on the basis of 65% at 3% cost a few years ago, today that might be 50% and 7.5% today. So that's going to mean that if you've got to refinance 10 million, you might be able to only get 6.78 million today. Okay, so there's going to be a gap. But not only that, is that not only are you borrowing less, but your cost of financing is going to be sort of 30-40% more on a month-to-month basis. So it's going to affect small players. It's going to affect bigger owners as well. Obviously, those effects will multiply as you go up to sort of 100 million plus. But for the small owners, the large owners, it's going to be quite acute, because at the moment we're not seeing any release in the interest rate cost. We might see rates falling at some stage, perhaps going into next year. I mean, inflation's trending down, which is great, but for 12 to 18 months, we're in a bit of a pickle in a sense in the financing world. So we might see this happen, and we might see more transactions as a result. So in the meantime, the private equity world is sort of focusing on credit, actually. So look, if we can't actually buy and get our returns, then we can lend, but they're expensive. One thing is, though, they can do mezzanine as well. So in that 6 million, 10 million refi, where you can only get 6 million of senior, they could probably do 4 million of mets, but it's going to be double digits. It's going to be expensive. So it's a future that has deals in prospect, but equally at the moment, we don't see them. I would say encouragingly, from an operator perspective, we're seeing strong take-up of holidays into the resort markets this summer. We're also going to see more pent-up demand from the US that hasn't really fully come back to Europe. We've also got the gateway to Asia open again, not just meaning China, but also Japan, Singapore, other markets as well. So a lot more Asian visitors coming to Europe. So it's going to be great for cities and resorts as well. I think in terms of sort of day-to-day cash flow and the costs crisis that a lot of owners and operators have been facing, we're probably going to see energy costs easing off. There's a bit of a trend downwards there, which is great for the market. There's also the business rate revaluation, which some owners I've been talking to said this is good because values have come down for business revaluation rate valuation, which means that we're going to be paying less for business rates. Where we're still going to face issues is staffing crisis, supply chains, these sort of things that are going to suppress cash flow. So I think overall, we're not in a bad situation at the moment. I think people are still wanting to stay in hotels and travel in hotels. And if anything, we're seeing in the States and other markets like that, an interest in convention venues or MICE venues, where conferences are coming back to resort markets. And we haven't seen that so much in Europe, but what's happening over there is that a lot of people who work remotely are being brought together by businesses and then being brought to a resort for a kind of an away day or away weekend with their companies. So we're probably going to see more of that in Europe. In the UK, we've certainly seen lots of domestic conferencing. There's been a big bounce back in sort of country house type hotels with conferencing where businesses have been able to go to. And also, let's not forget, they perhaps don't want to travel because it's expensive, etc. So local is better. So generally, I think there's some great positivity out there. It's just there's always a case of one side of the coin is better situated than others. And at the moment, it looks as if we've got a bit of indigestion in the market, a little bit of just wait to see. But equally, deals are still happening. And, I mentioned in prime locations, well, we've seen the Madrids, we've seen the Parises, we've seen the Amsterdams. But if you look at, and these are the best hotels in those cities, if you look at the UK, recent deals have absolutely followed that trend. If you look at Brighton, the Grand has just been sold, and that's the best hotel in Brighton. And the Queen's Hotel has just been sold in Leeds, and it's the best hotel in Leeds. Might not be a prime city, more of a secondary city perhaps, but it's the best asset in that city. So that's where people are focusing.
Yeah, and we saw the Henderson Park putting the Metropoles back on the market or on the market again, didn't we, over the weekend? So that would be right. You're spot on with the Yanks getting everywhere. I was in the Alps last week and they were absolutely infesting Chamonix, which is usually too low grade for them. But there were apps, no, it's true. There are absolutely mother tons of them there, all drinking in the middle of the day and doing all the traditional things that one does in that environment, which one doesn't normally see the French doing, and wearing their fancy clothes. So they're obviously getting over, enjoying a bit of the cheap euro action in their case. I was wondering, with all of these spending gaps or these funding gaps popping up all over the place, are we likely to see the return of weird things like ground rents, which tend to keep the pension funds very occupied, but always seem to go horribly wrong after a little amount of time? Are we going to see more?
In a high rate environment, interest rate environment, it's quite hard for those to work. I think. I think when they were most popular, it was when funds could buy it, sort of, and they could, and owners could sort of get 2%. They could sell it 2%, because frankly you're getting 0% in the bank. I think now to do a ground rent, an owner's going to investor will say, well, we need a 4% return, and then I just don't think the sort of the numbers will stack up so well. So I think that might have just been a moment in time, and it was kind of like a financing measure at the time that suited that environment. I don't know if we'll see anything too funky. It will be interesting to see, though, whether those assets that are ground rented that might perhaps come up for sale have appeal in the market, because a few folks have said, look, we don't really like buying long leases with an increasing rental liability. We want to buy freeholds. So it's going to be interesting to see what the appetite is for those types of deals.
Mm. Your latest tracker, Tom, mentioned Southern Europe as a particular point of interest. And I wonder is that pure leisure? Is that popularity coming purely from the leisure market? Or is the resort business travel and the bringing together people in a resort environment also playing into that? Are they having a double whammy of joy?
Yeah, well, I think last year there was a lot of pent up, particularly from the UK, a lot of holidays that were deferred, and a lot of people travelled Southern Europe, and I did as well, I have to say. The demand from corporates, I think, is only just is rising for sure. Whether or not there's an established trend yet for, I don't know, UK companies to be heading down to Mallorca or wherever, I'm not so sure. I don't have any stats to hand, but without doubt, the appeal of a lot of these resorts, as well as obviously the beautiful location, is a lot of them do have really great facilities for conferencing. And as I said, it could be a combination of domestic demand through bringing people together there. It could be through the conferences that, I don't know, there was a Hoftel one in Madrid, wasn't there? I think there's also one in was there one in Italy last year, a resort conference in Italy. So yeah, look, I think it's an upwards trend, and I've actually just been looking at the resort markets, because I mean, historically, the trend has been urban markets. These have been more established markets. They've been easy to finance. They've been more predictable. They've been more 12-month businesses. What we're seeing now is we're seeing people that are seeing these markets as potentially being resort markets as being 12 months as well, which brings more predictability, more. And so I think we're going to see more and more investment. Just on the Hilltop Tracker, from the deals last year, there were about 30% of the deals in resort markets versus 70% in urban markets. Now, a few years ago, that might have been as low as sort of 15% resorts. So we've certainly seen a big pickup, and no doubt that will continue.
Yes, which part of Southern Europe would you like to go to, Catherine? Which part of Southern Europe would you like to go to for the first New Dogs business strategy meeting?
I always want to go to San Remo all the time, because it's one of my favourite places. So we should go there.
Sold. Let's do it.
Well, can I just throw something in there as well? Because if you invite me, I'd sort of probably want to go somewhere like Ibiza. Because we could just chill out and then we could have some big nights as well.
This is true. Yeah.
And of course, I'd also like to go to the Four Seasons in Sicily, which yes. I've seen on White Lotus. And I'm watching it again, actually, because it's that good.
Well, I think you can rent the house now, can't you, on Airbnb? So,
oh, can you? The one that they stayed in for their two nights in Taormina?
Exactly, because, you know, Airbnb are never one to miss an opportunity for self-promotion, even though they're cutting the marketing budget.
Well, here we go then. I think we've got a variety of possible locations for all manner of things. Actual real life question from an actual podcast listener, Tom. This does exist. I know.
This is more and more like Alistair Stewart and Alistair and Roy Stewart. It really is.
And I can only apologise for that. But actual question was Israeli cash, please, and your thoughts on that. Why the UK? How active? Any particular players? What's the attraction? Do you have any thoughts on said?
Yeah. Well, I do actually, because I mean it's very topical, because Fatal have just bought the Grand Hotel in Brighton, and they also bought the Dilly, and people are often saying, you know, where does the money come from? They have a fund in Israel, actually, so they have resources, they have cash resources. They might borrow as well, but they are one of those buyers today that can complete with cash from their fund. The other big group is Park Plaza Hotels that have some Israeli investment. And the UK has always been about sort of flight to quality. So, and just buying secure assets in stable markets. And I think that's probably as much as any reason for them investing. Historically, that there have also been much larger investments in portfolios in the UK. So in markets like these, it's just a case of getting money into the safe havens. And that's probably as good a reason as any.
And you say flight to quality, and I completely agree with this, but if you were a boutique but perfectly strategic and well-formed B2B PR agency who were enjoying their Christmas party the week before Christmas and happened upon the Dilly at about 4 p.m. to try and find some booze to enjoy this Christmas party, you would be met to support the sector and conduct market research at the same time. You would have been met with a closed bar, which was not very flighty or quality-y. So yes, we remained mystified and then had to slope off to
W on Leicester Square.
Yeah.
Was that 4 p.m. or 4 a.m.?
4 p.m, but it was thoroughly justified because it was our Christmas party.
Yeah, no, agreed. I think, look, I agree. I totally agree. I mean, you just got to stop going there. But it was about the sale was closing. It doesn't mean that the business should stop running, though. So I don't know why that was the case. But that's a property, though, that has such an amazing location and a history as well, that money will be invested. I think it was about 90 million they were talking about. So it could be a huge investment.
That will open the bar.
That will open the bar.
That will open the bar. And for that deal, Fatal, you know, an owner-operator, it was always going to be an owner-operator type deal, really, because you might question on a long lease on interest, sort of the sort of capital growth you might make. But if you're running the business, then you're going to make your income. So your operational income. So it was a great deal for them. And then clearly they've gone on to other things. So that's good.
Absolutely. It is good because we'd had all sorts of weird rumors around Fatal and not all of them were amazingly positive.
Well, look, there are other investors from that region as well. Vivian, for example. And there have been rumors about them, but look, they just refinanced. They've got quite a lot of assets. I think somebody has been shorting them and being very, very vocal and open about what he sees as weaknesses in the business. But I suppose you're allowed to do that, aren't you? So he's been shorting their stock. But actually, they've just done a 200 mil refi. They've managed to sort of put it all together quite respectably. So good for them. But they own a lot of assets in the UK.
Yeah. Talking of hotel companies who have a difficult time in the stock market, where are you seeing the Accor division heading? Is someone going to swoop in and buy the economy or swoop in and buy the luxury?
It's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because some businesses, there is the figurehead, IHG or Hilton or wherever. But and I know Sebastian is the figurehead and he's the CEO, but he's now got so many sub-CEOs, hasn't he? I don't know whether that creates the opportunity for somebody to say, well, I'll just take out the whole team and the whole business. And so, yeah, look, it could happen. It's stranger things have happened. I would say they would probably want to be the acquirer rather than the seller if there was an opportunity, as they have been showing recently.
Can I ask you a quick question about those investors who traditionally have a shorter hold period and whether the current uncertainty will affect them? Will they be put off from any new investments, do you predict, or will they plough on anyway because 3 to 5 years is still a tasty amount of time to make a decent return?
Yeah, it's you see, a lot of these funds, these opportunity funds particularly, and opportunity funds have got return requirements of sort of up to 20%. Value add is sort of more like 15% plus, and then core plus is sort of 10 to 15. So at the moment, we're seeing people going in at sort of core plus level, and not many of these groups have got core plus funds. They've got more, they're more focused on the value add and the let's really get our hands on the business and extend and reposition and in the Spanish resorts or the Portuguese resorts, what people love doing at the moment is buying assets at 3-star level and converting them into luxury, because that's really where they see the growth of the business. So if you haven't bought for 3 years, you've got the money in the fund, the clock's ticking. So then you've sort of only got 4 years left. So you can extend the fund, the length of the fund. So that's probably where some of the challenges will be. It's just a case of, well, actually, I've now only got 4 years because I haven't really spent anything for 3 years. And that's going to make it tricky. I think with the ideal sort of play for them is buy, sort of fix, rebrand. And perhaps you could do that in 3 years. So you might be able to turn around. And in fact, what we have seen is we've seen some pretty stellar deals happening of hotels that have only just opened that have been selling incredibly well. So normally you would sort of stick around, hit stabilized trading and then sell it. But the W in Rome was pretty much sold on opening. So the Six Senses in Rome is being mooted for a similar scenario. So they're looking to sell that pretty much when it opens. Whereas normally you would be, well, let's just see how the cash flow goes. And that might be for a number of reasons, but one of them could be, look, we can't afford to stick around. We just kind of need to sell it now rather than wait a while. And perhaps now is the time for that sort of rather prime market that's able to buy those assets today.
Interesting. Marvellous. Well, we haven't touched on, of course, which is clearly the most pressing topic of the day, is what kind of baked goods, biscuit, cakes you are currently enjoying.
Okay, well, this could be a long answer. Seriously. No, not at all. So yesterday I did my bike ride and I had a Bakewell tart at a coffee stop. I had a double espresso and a Bakewell. And then my friend I was cycling with had a big brownie. And I was sort of, I don't know whether my Bakewell was quite up to it. It wasn't sort of gooey enough. And, you know what I mean? It was just a bit crumbly and a bit, anyway, don't worry about that. I'm okay still. And then back home, after my ride, I had a hot cross bun, actually, toasted.
One of these controversial new ones where they put, like, cranberry things in.
No. Put it in the bottom, no, so put it in the top of the Arga and then just we're off to the races.
Mm. Wow.
Two minutes either side. And it's beautiful. So I had that. And then we didn't have cake yesterday, which surprised me because it was Sunday and we didn't have cake. So I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on there.
That's... Will you have cake today instead or?
Monday cake.
Yes. Yes. I love the pastry aisle in Lidl. Have you ever been to the pastry aisle in Lidl?
Is this the one that they put in just as soon as you walk in to tempt you into all manner?
Oh, my God. It's great. Cookies and croissant. And oh, my gosh. It's just divine.
Mm, there you go, boys and girls. Off we all trot.
But just sort of pulling them back to sort of hotels, if I may, for a moment.
If we must.
The bakery hotel in Madrid is quite stunning because you walk in and it's literally like a bakery. So you literally walk into the hotel. It's called Apothic Bakery or something. Practique Bakery. Yeah. So it's got sort of rooms above, but literally you walk in and your reception is kind of the other side of the bakery. So you have to walk past it.
Finally, the concept we're all here for.
How amazing is that?
Do you think we could extend ourselves an invitation there to record the podcast? Because that feels like the most appropriate setting for a podcast, which is essentially hotels and biscuits.
Mm. Yeah. Well, because you'll be there, you'll be in them, and people will be checking in. Have a look at it, Practique Bakery. I mean, it's an amazing place.
It's like the DoubleTree gone mad. That's what that is.
Yeah. But it's also it's sort of affordable priced rooms. And what? I'm not getting paid for this, by the way. Not getting paid for this.
I can see no possible reason why we shan't all be jumping on the first plane there, quite frankly.
Definitely. Well, you know, these days my London trips are costing me, well, if I get my train off peak, it's about 40 quid. But do you know what? If I can get a flight to Madrid for 50 quid, I'm on it.
Yes. You know. Let's do it. That will be the location of our next podcast recording, Tom.
Definitely. All right.
Marvellous. Well, thank you for that jolly jaunt round all things transactional and either actually happening or forecast to happen. Most helpful, as always. Thank you also to your fine background, which we shall share with the listening ears that tune into this. And yes, your time is very much appreciated.
Well, it's a great pleasure, Emily. Thank you. Catherine, thank you very much.
No, thank you.
As well. And are you you're having a week of rest, are you, after your skiing holiday?
If by a week of rest you mean a week of normal work, then yes.
Okay. Well, that's kind of what I meant, yes. All right. Well, look, thank you very much.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you for returning safely from the mountains, Catherine, and for imparting us with all your wisdom, as usual.
Cheers.
Very good. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Do share, like, subscribe, and all those things you need to do from wherever you get this podcast. And join us again next time. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Ooh, bye-bye.
So that concludes our thoughts for this week. Thank you to everyone involved in creating this episode and providing something for your ears whilst walking the dog, washing the cat, chopping the veg, or however else you pass the time while podcasting.
Please do review and subscribe if you get your ear entertainment via Apple, or follow New Tricks if your ear delight comes from Spotify. These things make a difference, apparently. Until next time.